They told me what you doing. I said, what I'm about to do is turn the fuck up.
This is the 6-Star Booty, JT Energy. Open your ears and enjoy the experience. That is the Dark Match Podcast.
Hey guys, you're listening to the Dark Match Podcast, and this is your boy, the Amped Champion, Crash Jackson.
This is former NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, Tim Storm. On behalf of myself and Mama Storm, thank you for listening to the Dark Match Podcast.
Wonderful!
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Did you watch NXT TakeOver this past Sunday?
No.
You still haven't watched it? Oh, man.
No, I got home Sunday because it was Cancer Survivors Day, and anyone that knows, both my parents have conquered and survived and whatnot. So I went over, brought over some ice cream cake, and with everything going on with the rest of the weekend, dude, I got home and I passed the fuck out on my couch.
Oh, I completely understand. Like, I had a couple people over, just the usual crowd. We brought the TV out onto the back patio, put on the fire pit, and watched a little bit of it. What I love about NXT TakeOvers, though, is they're quick. They're only about 2.5 hours long. They start at 7. They're over by 9:30, 10 o'clock. It's perfect. So we'll watch that, and then we're kind of looking at each other. We're like, okay, well, we were kind of anticipating this to go until like 11, and we just kind of started talking, and then they're like telling me that they haven't watched any of like Dark Side of the Ring, and they're like, have you watched it? Like, what is it about? I'm like, you've never seen Dark Side of the Ring, like any of them?
So, dude, I haven't. I still haven't.
I know, but you weren't over. So I introduced them. We watched the Owen Hart episode, and then immediately afterwards, like, we were kind of conversating back and forth, like, during the Owen Hart one, and my one friend had mentioned the Road Warriors, and I'm like, dude, they made a Dark Side of the Ring about the Road Warriors, and he's like, no, like, is it available? I'm like, yeah, we'll watch it right after this one. So we immediately afterwards watched the Road Warriors Dark Side of the Ring. So they've completed season 2, so I'm excited to see what they come out with in season 3. I've heard a little bit of rumblings, but you really need to catch up. It is a fantastic show. So on top of all the other shows that I've told you to jump in on, but speaking of one of the shows that I've constantly told you to jump in on, there was a little there was a little nugget that was dropped during our Bulk Nasty interview that we should talk to this person about it. Now, I can't recall whether or not we put it in the actual episode or not, but we went ahead and we got this individual, and Bulk Nasty wasn't even the first one that told us we should have this guy on here. He's been highly recommended, so we went ahead and got that taken care of. So let's get right into our interview right now. We saw you.
I'm trying to. I'm
but
a human being. I realize I'm the IWC heavyweight champion. But just relax.
I'm trying to. But the last time we saw you, you became IWC heavyweight champion. The ring was flooded with snack cakes that at the time I was on a no carb, no fun diet. So I'm like, okay, why can't I celebrate with Jimmy Vegas? But we have the IWC heavyweight champion on the line. I kind of let the ball drop there, but we got Jimmy Vegas on the line. First and foremost, how you doing during this quarantine, COVID-19, whole fiasco that's going on?
I got to tell you, I'm doing okay. I'm essential as fuck. So, you know, my life is still continuing on. Really, the only thing that's changed is wearing these stupid masks and not being able to work out at lunchtime. That's really about it.
Yeah, I'm essential as well. And I was told, unfortunately, like I had to wear a mask, but I'm in a closed location in an office by myself. And I was told I still have to wear a mask. Even when I'm in the office, door closed, no one's coming in, have to wear a mask. And they're like, well, you have to wear a mask. It has to be nothing extravagant. It just needs to be a basic color, and you have to wear it at all times. I'm like, all right, perfect. So I went, and I went to a local comic book store at the bottom of my street, and I was like, hey, do you have masks? They're like, yeah, we have Avengers, we have Marvel, we have DC. I'm like, which one is the most colorful, eye-catching, that's going to jump out, period? I walked into the work the next day. They're like, yeah, you took that seriously. I'm like, you're telling me I got to wear a mask when I don't even see you guys. So, yes, I'm going to I'm gonna get whatever I want. So it's good that
I'll tell you what, though. When this shit's over, if you don't think I'm going to wear a mask in every store that made me wear a mask, you're crazy, because it's going down. I'm wearing ski masks. I'm wearing hockey masks. I'm wearing all the masks. Thanks.
Yeah.
7-Eleven, get sheets. Is going to get it the most. They were the first to enforce this on us, because I go to Sheetz at least 3-4 times a day. And I boycott Sheetz. I haven't been in Sheetz for 2 weeks now. And I'm going to wear the mask forever now, to prove a point.
Like, my wife and I, we work in the financial sector. We both work for a bank, and someone actually sent something to her that was like, it was like a meme that was like, guy walked into the branch earlier today wearing a mask, feared for my health. Thank God he only robbed the place. So, we continuously tell people, like, hey, you have to remove the mask. And now it's like, you're not allowed in here without it. So hide your identity and walk in here. And it's hot and you have sunglasses on. So we have no idea who the heck you are. But no, I'm going to wear a mask at this point. Like, the thing's comfortable,
absolutely,
too. I'm going to wear it everywhere. I don't even care. So, but taking a few steps back, obviously there's a lot of questions. A lot of people, since we even started the podcast, a lot of people sent your name over. Hey, get Jimmy Vegas on. Get Jimmy Vegas on. I would honestly feel comfortable saying that. Well, I don't feel comfortable saying it entirely, but I would say that you're one of the most requested guests that we've had since starting this podcast. So
actually blows my mind, to be honest.
A lot of people care about you. What's so surprising about that? You're the IWC heavyweight champion.
Currently, I am the man. But three months ago, how long have I had the title? What month is it? I don't even know what day it is. On this Sunday, is it Sunday? I've noticed over the course of the last year, you get a couple of the diehard fans, but then you have a couple that just want to see me go, man. They're done. They don't want to see the old man anymore. They want to see the young bucks get in there and do their flippy shit. But I've seen the signs. I've heard I go back and I watch the matches over just to see, what I can do better and things like that. And I listen to the crowd, and this last show, somebody yelled, "Let's end his stupid career." Right when everything went quiet. When Jesus. I find out who that person is, I'm going to punch the living shit out of them. But, I don't know. I've never been one to, be a glory hound or, it's all about me. I'm more or less, I get in. You guys notice I really don't come out at intermission. Nothing against the fans. It's just not my thing. It's weird. Like, I don't want all eyes on me. I do my thing. I got to wrestle. I do my thing. I'm not there to take pride in what you do. You're a wrestler. Great.
There's nothing against that. I can name multiple individuals that don't go out during intermission. It's just, why interact if you just know you're not going to create a certain experience? So you have certain individuals that are going to go above and beyond. And it's a personality trait. Like, look, I don't like people. Personally, myself, I don't like people. I might not portray that. I might put a good mask on, and since we're on the mask talk, I might wear a great mask. I don't like people. I get very self-conscious. I get very nervous. I hide it very well, years of practice, But if I can avoid it any way I possibly can, I absolutely will. So putting all eyes on me, like putting a table out, like, hey, people come up and talk to me. I just feel like I walk away from so many tables, even meeting wrestlers, like, wow, I probably excuse my explanation here, but I probably sounded like a huge chotch talking to that guy. Like, I probably walked away. He's like, oh, thank God that frickin' conversation's over. I feel that way with every interaction that I have. So I don't fault you for that. Some people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more comfortable if I'm walking in my car at the end of the night and you want to say hello, give me a high five, a handshake, whatever. I'm cool with that. Like, I just don't want to go out there and whore myself out in front of people and try to, like, you know. I mean, I've had a checkered path, man. Like, doing crowds, being in a crowd, I don't really like it. For years of bouncing, I was also a deputy sheriff. So, like, you know, you're always on your toes. You always got your head on a swivel. And it's all it takes is one fan to, you know, realize or not realize that it's a show, man, you know, and take a poke at you or whatever. Next thing you know, you got a lawsuit. And, you know, I got a temper. It's quicker than firecracker fuse, you know what I mean?
It kind of goes back to, I don't know if you heard the story or not, like with MJF. He, like, the parents of this kid, like, this kid walked up, wanted to meet him. He had to do this autograph signing. This kid was, like, a huge MJF fan, and he got the character on TV, MJF, who doesn't like the fans, is disrespectful, flips people off, does whatever he wants. And this parent was like, wow, you really ruined this experience for my son. And, like, even, like, AEW came out, they're like, he is his character. Like, that's him. He can do what he wants. Like, sorry it ruined it, but what do you expect, like, type of situation? But I feel you, because, like, I come from a military background. My entire life, I didn't like crowds because I was around my father that had horrible PTSD, and every second he's looking in every single direction, like, to plan whatever. So it just kind of instilled in me after 32 years, like, hey,
right,
like, be cautious of your surroundings. And going to a baseball game with my kids, whenever that can pick back up, is always an experience in itself. But you mentioned how you were a deputy sheriff, you were a bouncer. What kind of led you to wrestling overall? Was it just, hey, here's an opportunity for me to get paid to actually beat people up and get paid for it?
No, actually, we were, no one's really ever heard the whole story. I've been on a couple podcasts, and I kind of let them in on the basics. The idea, when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a wrestler. I didn't know how to go about being a wrestler. Back then, it wasn't really the internet where you could just punch in a wrestling school and go to wrestling school. I had no idea. I really didn't know anything about independent wrestling. Didn't know it existed. You know, every once you hear, oh, there's wrestling at, you know, the VFW or whatever, but, you know, Coco Beware was there. So you kind of like, maybe it's a spinoff of the WWF at the time. I had no idea. No idea when I was younger. So, fast forward to, you know, I'm in my 20s and, still, man, it'd be cool to be a wrestler. It'd totally be cool, you know? And, I was going through, I went through a police academy up here, and I got myself in a little bit of jam. I got into a fight, and I had some charges brought against me. So during that, I'm thinking, fuck, man, I don't know if, you know, they wanted assault charges. I don't know, I'm going to be getting into the police academy at this point. You know, I got lawyers and shit working on this stuff. And so my buddy and I, childhood friend, we're sitting at home. At my parents' house, actually, before we went out to Southside, and we're watching ECW wrestling, and that's when they had the commercial for, you know, there's now a wrestling school in Pittsburgh, you know, and we're like, holy shit! You know, I look at mom, I said, why won't we do? Why, I mean, why shouldn't we not do this? You know, this is it. I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna have a criminal record. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get hired as a policeman ever. You know, so called the number on, this was like Saturday night, you know, Monday morning I called the number. It was a answering service. A little bit later, a lady called me back from ECW, House of Hardcore 2. It was the secretary. She said, we'd like to schedule an interview. When are you available? I said, when can we do it? And she's like, well, we have two of them tomorrow on Tuesday. So the buddy that I was with, he had got the message too. He went to the morning session he called me up. He's like, hey, man, I just signed up for wrestling school. So I get down to the second session. I walk in, there's Shane Douglas standing there. I'm like, well, that's a franchise in the house. So, you know, we go through the, you know, this, and this. So I said, you just stop right there. I said, just let me write you a check and let's get this going. So I don't know if it was a week later or 2 weeks later, we started training. It was in New Brighton. It actually wasn't in Pittsburgh. It was in New Brighton. So, I mean, that was like a 45, 50-minute ride from where we were living in, right outside of Pittsburgh in Greentree. And ironically, I live 20 minutes from there now. I live up in Elwood City. So pretty close. I couldn't tell you where the school is. Like, I'd have to go up and down every street in New Brighton to figure it out. But, yes, I mean, that's what turned it in. I ended up... I ended up getting my record expunged. It was simple, solid charges. Everything's good. I went on to another police academy in Florida and became a sheriff for Sarasota County Sheriff's Department. I did that for a couple years while wrestling. They weren't, you know, they really didn't know too much about it because I would do all my wrestling in Pittsburgh. I'd fly back home and wrestle while I was down there. That was like, I went down in 2005, so I started with the Sheriff's Department in 2006. So I bounced back and forth, you know, during that time. And then I shot over to Texas, did a year in Texas. I actually wrestled for a living over there for the first few months that I was there. Wrestled for River City Wrestling with Sean Hernandez. He took care of me. He would get me booked all over the state. So we did some NWA places like Corpus Christi, you know, Austin. There was some other spots. There was one place we were damn near in Mexico at one point. So he helped me out a lot down there. And then I got hired on with the sheriff's department down there. And that only lasted a few months. My living situation and everything didn't work out for the best. So I packed up my car, my dog, and go back to Pittsburgh for a temporary stop. And I never left. So I continued that. Came back as a mainstay at IWC back 2009, 2010, and you know, we had a good run with the founding fathers around that time. You know, IWC has always been like a really good independent promotion, you know, so always had work, always you know, I was always good with the ownership. From Bubba's the one that started it all off, and then went to Norm, and then Chuck. And now we got Plumber. So I can't stand Plumber. I like to slap the shit out of him. But, you know. yeah, man, that's how it really started. I never really told anybody about it. Like I said, I had a problem when I was younger, getting in bar fights and things like that. And, you know, I did want to be a wrestler. And I thought, what a better way to, you know, take some anger issue out on people and actually get paid, like you said. It's still a stress relief for me now to this day. You know, if I'm not wrestling, I can definitely see, you know, the agitation and stuff. Now I've learned a lot getting older. I'm a dad now. So I gotta, you know, I can't be a ticking time bomb all the time. You know, I gotta,
oh yeah,
you know, put on a good face for her. But, you know, once she starts dating, the ticking time bomb is back.
Well, you only have one daughter, correct?
Yeah, just one.
I have two, so, but at the same point, I also have two sons, so I have four altogether, and already, like, there was, it was like 2 weeks ago, I kid you not, we're at a park, this kid comes up to my daughter, and starts, like, talking to her, like, really nice, like, I was like, oh, that's really adorable, like, kind of like, I mean, she's six, so how in-depth right. could the conversation really be? It was probably like, hey, do you like Barbies, or do you watch this on Netflix, some show I've never heard of, or do you watch YouTube? Next thing you know, I kid you not, my 22-month-old just comes up and just fucking bum-rushes this kid out of nowhere, just takes him out, and I just looked at my wife, and I just go, I don't even got to be the bad guy. I'm going to leave it to him.
No, you'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. You'll be fine. I'm like, my youngest will take care of everything for me. He's going to be my linebacker at this point. Who knows? But, like, I just watched this kid get leveled. And I just looked at the parents, and I'm just like, he's not even two. Like, he doesn't know any better. But in the back of my head, I'm like, he just saved me the trouble because I was... Like,
right.
So I completely understand.
I have a younger sister, and my dad was always the one who would just point and direct me to go take care of the business. We just talked about this a couple days ago. Found out a mutual friend of mine dating this dude that dated my sister in high school. And I was trying to figure out who this dude was. And I couldn't remember. And so his name came up. And here, he took hostage a house key of my sister's. And my dad called me and said, "You need to go take Mike and go get the key." Now, Mike's the same dude who I went to wrestling school with. So we've been running roughshod on the neighborhood since we were 9 years old. And without hesitation, I called him and said, "Hey, my dad said we got to go take care of something." He was ready. I went and grabbed him. Away we went. So we went to the kid's house. I took a page out of his older brother's handbook, announced my full name to his mother, who I was, and why I was there. And the kid came out, and he's like, "Oh, let me explain." I said, "You shut the fuck up. Give me the key." And his mother started popping off her mouth. I said, "You shut the fuck up, too." And I turned around with the key, and I looked, and my buddy is ready to spring out of my, I had a Jeep Wrangler at the time. He's ready to spring out of this motherfucker. And I'm like, "We're good. We're good here." So, yeah. This story actually just came, like, this all came around, like, not even a week ago. And I laughed and laughed and laughed. I thought, "Oh, man, and I can't, and I might run into this kid again, you know? And what do I do then?
Buy him a
smack
drink.
Him around for, you know, 30 years later, whatever it was, you know?"
Yeah. It's like that part from the movie The Town. It's like, "Look, we got to take care of some shit. You can't ask questions. We're going to get into some shit. We probably are going to get popped, but I need you." And the buddy just looks at him and goes, "Whose car are we driving?" Like, no questions.
That's the goddamn truth.
Oh, yeah, that's a best friend for you. Like, no questions, mm-hmm. Just, "Okay, who's driving?" It's like, you don't gotta tell me. Like, who's driving?
What's funny is that, you know, I won't get into too many details about it again, but that court thing, he was involved in that, too. So there was, like, I mean, we've had a bond since we were 9 years old. And to this day, if I said, "Hey, I need help," and it would be, "Okay. How soon do you need me there?" You know. So.
Oh yeah, it's like, "Hey, I was actually just pulling onto your street."
A couple good friends, you know. Got a couple. I got a handful of friends I can count on, you know, and a lot of acquaintances, you know.
Oh yeah, and that's always good to have too. And
yeah.
Like, my kids ask me all the time, like, "Hey, like, what about Uncle this or Uncle that?" It's like, "Yeah, those aren't really my brothers." It's like, "Well, why do we call them that?" It's like, when you need them, you'll find out why.
Yeah, it's like, you'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Like, we're not blood, but if I need something, they're going to be there, and they're the first people I'm going to call. So,
right.
It's always good to have those friends, and especially since absolutely. You were 9 years old. It's running the block.
Yeah.
And who knows, running up rap sheets too. I mean, who knows? Always good to have those people. Those are the friends that you need in life. But
for sure.
So yeah, you traveled around. You were in Sarasota, Florida. You went to Texas, met Sean Hernandez. Yeah, you ventured around from there, decided, "Hey, I'm going to pack up my car. I'm going to go to Pittsburgh. This is just a temporary stop at this time." Did you kind of have other plans when you got to Pittsburgh? Like, "Hey, this is just the temporary spot, but here's where I want to be." Did you have another goal in mind?
Yeah. Well, I was going to go back and go back to Florida and go back to be a sheriff. So I got back and started interviewing. The interviewing process started. I started with Sarasota, Hillsborough County, a couple other counties just to get back to Florida. My goal in life was always live in Florida. Love it down there. Weather's beautiful. I'm not a big snow guy. I don't like fucking cold. And when I went down there, I sat on the beach one time with Chuck Roberts. He came down for business. And we're sitting there, and I said to him, I go, "I could do this the rest of my life." He goes, I said, "This right here." I said, I don't even need to work. I just want to just sit. This all I want to do is just sit here on this beach the rest of my life. And he's, well, buddy, I mean, you need to work. I realize that, Chuck. I realize that. I said, but the end goal, you know, when I first started wrestling was, you know, get into ECW, make some money doing that, you know, and see what happens from there. But, you know, then the end goal was to move to Florida, you know, and if once ECW, you know, closed up shop and, you know, the wrestling school closed and we're on our own, now the idea was getting a WWE, you know, so I started having dark matches and all that stuff. And, you know, the idea was get there, be retired when I was 35, living in Florida, live the good life, you know, party, have my fun, you know. There's guys that, the goal is to go to Japan, wrestle in Japan. Goal is to, you know, wrestle at Madison Square Garden. I always wanted to wrestle in Club La Vila, I think is what it's called. The Monday Night Show Spring Break where they had the fucking ring in the swimming pool.
Oh, yeah.
That was always my goal in life. That was my goal. That was it. Like, that's all I wanted to do. I'm like, I should get into WCW. Well, then WCW closes up shop. You know what I mean? So, That's gone. That dream's gone. But yeah, man, that was always the goal, was to go back to Florida. But some things happened, and you know, I needed to work while I was here on a temporary layover in Pittsburgh, and I reached out to Bubba, and Bubba always had his hands in something, nightclubs, restaurants, things like that. So I called him. I was probably home for 3 days. But hey, man, I need some help. I need a job. You know, anybody's hiring, I mean, you know, bounce, whatever it needs to be done. And he goes, yeah, man. He's like, let me call you back in about 20 minutes. He's like, I'm just getting in my car. You know, he's leaving work. And I was just getting off the rodeo. And he called me. He said, we got this place. He's like what was his title? Operating partner or some shit of Mullins down on the North Shore, right across from PNC Park. He's like, come on down tomorrow. I want to introduce you to the general manager. We're going to get you squared away. So I'm like, cool. Get down there, meet this guy, Steven. Super guy, still friends with him to this day. We call him Stevie Reno because he came dressed as Stevie Reno to one of the shows one time. It was fucking hilarious. But so they give me a job as a bouncer and a bar back. I'm like, oh, man, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, this is right at the time where the Pirates are on. It's like May. I think it was May. And so you got all summer baseball, you know. So bar backing, you make at least $100 a night. Bouncing, you can make about the same. So you have these, you know, 10-day straight baseball games. And then, you know, the next – you might work two – they're home for two games and they're away, you know, whatever. So I kept – at this point, I'm interviewing. I'm flying down to Florida. I'm interviewing. And, you know, it's like fucking – I don't know what – Sarasota was on a hiring freeze. They told me in Hillsborough County, they're like, we're going to take somebody that's more experienced. I'm like, you know what? Okay. So, still working at Mullins. Now we're getting into like, getting closer to the end of summer. I'm like, hey man, I'm going to be dipping out of here, you know, and I'm calling all my friends down in Florida, looking for bouncing jobs, personal training, anything I can get my fucking, just to get the fuck out of Pittsburgh. And, one night, Bob was like, hey, man, we're going to get on the south side. We got to go check some pricing. I'm like, well, okay, cool. So we go out, and we're going to these different bars, and we're writing down prices, beers. So I'm like, what the fuck? Why are we doing this? And so we get in the car at the one end. We're down by Jack's. We drive up to the old paparazzi's and pull in there. I'm like, dude, you can't be parking in here. They're going to tow you. He's like, I think we'll be okay. All right, so he goes, he opens the door of the paparazzi. He goes, this is the new Mullins. You're the general manager. I'm like, dude, I am leaving in a couple months. Like, I appreciate this. He goes, just do it till you're ready to leave. Just do it till you're ready to leave. So
kinda we get suckered the, you into it, yeah.
Yeah. So in the meantime, like he ended up firing one of his assistant manager at the North Shore. Let me rewind a little bit. Assistant manager at North Shore gets fired, hands me the key, and says, you're new assistant manager. You don't have to bounce. You don't have to bar back anymore. You're just assistant manager. I'm like, and it's always the same thing. Dude, I'm leaving in a couple months. And he's like, I know. So fast forward a couple months later. Now we're over here. We're going to be a general manager of this place. So we're remodeling and all that stuff. We're hiring all these bartenders. And he said to me, he goes, back when I was in the North Shore, he goes, listen, you're a manager now. You can't sleep with any of the bartenders. All right. So like, yeah, no problem. No problem. So we get to, you know, the North Shore or the Mullins on Carson is what it was called. It's on Carson Street. And so that's the big, you know, that's the big bar scene in south side of Pittsburgh. It's 140 bars or whatever it's called. But so we get it going, and as you know, we're business is picking up and time's ticking on, and next thing you know, I'm gonna be a dad. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to Florida now, you know. So the time was with my daughter's mother. She's a school teacher up here, and they make a lot more money in Pittsburgh than they do in Florida, you know. So I was like, well, all right. So just piss away my dreams, but I got a kid now, and you know, it was a good exchange. You know what I mean? My dream of Florida is it's still there. When I retire someday, I'll go back. But in exchange, I got an awesome daughter, you know, and changed my life for the best. You know what I mean? It cut the partying down from, you know,
non-existent
bar business, you know, to I got out of that. And, you know, I did some odds and ends jobs. I was doing still wrestling. I was doing some stuff down in Nashville. They were paying me pretty good down there. So like, I got a couple part-time jobs and, you know, then I started doing, I got hired as a mailman and, went through the training with the mail service, and, it was about 6 weeks of training, and, Friday comes around, they're like, okay, you're going to start on Tuesday. You're going to work Tuesday through Saturday. You have a route that's going to be waiting for you up Mount Lebanon and all this good stuff. And in the meantime, I was bouncing this place called the Rex Theater, where WrestleRex. WrestleRex is actually Sam Adonis' thing. That's the Rex. I was bouncing down there. And one night, there was supposed to be 150 people private party, which turned into about a 500-person rap show. And they had me wanding at the front door, and the head bouncer guy's like, hey, do me a favor, go down and make sure those guys, they need to go to the bathroom or anything like that. Just go cover them. So as I go down and cover them, a fight breaks out. And I jumped on off the stage, and I grabbed the guy. There's a guy on the right of me and a guy on the left. Those two were fighting. So I grabbed the guy on the right and just kind of pulled him aside. Well, all of a sudden, somebody tried to punch the dude that I was holding onto in my right over my shoulder and broke my hand. And, like, I felt my hand go numb. I looked down, like, and I could see the bone sticking up and shit. Well, now I'm fighting in the middle of this fight, you know, with one hand. So I'm smacking people with flashlights and shit. Well, it just didn't stop. It, like, turned into a fucking riot. And I'm waiting for people to come to help me. Well, there's people running out of the building, and the rest of the bouncers couldn't come in because they were running out. And I'm like, this is unfucking believable. Like, I've never been in a situation like this where I'm like, I am totally outnumbered and it is getting fucking crazy. So at one point I just stepped aside and let it go. And I was like, there's the one dude I relieved to go to the bathroom. We just got back when the shit started going. I said, just let him fight. And, I got smacked in the fucking back, and I didn't know what, and I just lost my mind, and I beat the living fuck out of this dude. And finally, it all ended, and I walked up to the bar, and I said, I'm going to need some ice and a bottle of Jack Daniels now. And that was it, man. I went to go fucking to the mail place on Tuesday with a splint on, because Sunday I went to the hospital, and they're like, yeah, your hand's broken. They're like, you can't work. So now I'm like, now what the fuck am I going to do, you know? So they say a week. And in the meantime, I'm going through separating from my daughter's mother, you know? So fucking shit's going awry. Like, she's moving away. I'm stuck with this house. I'm trying to get rid, sell this house. And I'm moving into an apartment, also with a broken fucking hand and no job. And I'm still, you know, still trying to wrestle. And I wrestled with a fucking cast, I think, a couple times. But so I happened to stumble into the doctor's office to go get my hand set. And I ran into a buddy of mine from that we used to work out with back in like 96, 97. And like, I stayed in touch with him. I used to go out with him and shit. And I knew he was working for a protein bar company. And I said, hey, man, how's that fucking protein bar company going? And he's like, it's doing really good. Now, I thought he was just doing account work. And come to find out, he was a CFO now for the company.
Oh, geez.
I go, hey, you guys need any help? Like, fucking cleaning toilets? You have a warehouse? I mean, what do you guys got going on? He goes, I actually need somebody in my warehouse. I go, I think I just lost my job at the post office. And he asked me, you know, what I was making there. And I told him, he's like, I'll pay you more than that. I'm like, fair enough. So I called him. They called my name to come in and get my handset. And I called him right after I left the doctor's office. He's like, I already called human resources and told him, don't worry about looking for a warehouse guy. So I started a month later at a protein bar company. And after, I think it was like 3 or 4 months, they ended up firing the manager and they replaced them. I'm the manager of shipping and receiving, and I'm an executive, if you will, an essential as fuck. But so that's what kept me. That's what kept me. All this is what kept me in Pittsburgh, man. And I know it's a long-winded story. I'm sure a lot of people are falling asleep right now. But
no, it's crazy as fuck.
That's the
real, kidding me?
The real life of Jimmy Vegas. You know what I mean? So
you're like continuously trying to get down to Florida, continuously telling people like, "Hey, I'm leaving. I'm leaving." Well, we got this, and then. Okay, well, I'm leaving, though. Okay, but yeah. We got this. Okay, well, in the meantime, you know what? I'll bounce here. Hey, your hand's broken. Hey. You.
Yeah.
It's just like when it rains, it pours. And like
I've had a black cloud over my head, man, for years. You know, like, I don't know if you followed any of my backstory and with the dark matches and the tryouts and all that stuff, but it's always like, as soon as I got on the radar, with the WWE, something would happen, you know. I went through a tryout camp in Cincinnati, Ohio for a week with them. And, you know, at the end of the thing, they're talking money and, you know, would you be able to move down here to Louisville or Cincinnati? At the time, Kurt Angle's brother, Eric, was in Louisville and at OVW. And I'm like, hey, I'm good friends with him. I could live with him. That'd be great. And they're like, oh, it was Dr. Tom Pritchard and Kevin Kelly, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna, yeah, you have the it factor." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So I go back home, and I put my 2 weeks in at the job I was working, and never got my FedEx package saying I got a contract or anything for a week. So I give them a call like, Vegas, we're on hiring freeze.
Oh, jeez.
Fuck. Okay. So luckily I was able to talk, you know, to the company I worked for and let them know that I'm still going to be here. And they're like, that's, you know, they were cool with it. But then, you know, I'm still trying. Kevin Kelly was my contact person. I'd send him video every month from every show that I did for the month. And, then they fired him, you know, they let him go. And then it was Dr. Tom. Now, Dr. Tom still liked me because he remembered me from, you know, the camps and shit. And so now I'm sending him stuff, and he would send me here and there, and they gave me a lot of guidance and stuff, and then they fired him. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what the fuck? So I think at that point it went to Dreamer. I sent stuff to Dreamer and never heard back from him. And then it went Nova had the job, and Sandman told me, like, reach out to Nova, he'll get you squared away. Never heard back from them, and then Dr. Tom got hired back again. So this was right before I left Florida to go to Texas. And I know they were running shows out of some bar up in like Palm Harbor or something like that in Florida. So we go up there and we're just watching these, and like it was Ted DiBiase was there, Jack Swagger, Cabana was there. I talked to Cabana. I don't know if you guys remember Platinum Mike Preston. He was he went on to be Andrew Vane. He was there, and now he was in my wrestling school. We went to Shane's school together. Yeah, so I'm bullshitting with him, and like I said, who's running the shit here? He's like, it's Pritchard, Dr. Tom. I'm like, sweet. Well, I had a fucking DVD to give him. So whenever I talked to him, gave him the DVD, and we're bullshitting. He's like, yeah, it's great seeing you. You know, last time I saw you up in Pittsburgh, and I'm like, yeah, I live down here. I'm getting ready to move to Texas. And he's like, you're moving to Texas, huh? He's like, you know, we're running stuff down here in Florida, right? I go, yeah, I can come back though, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went on, I talked to him. We went, this was about two, three weeks later, I gave him a call and did you watch? He goes, yeah, I watched the video, man, you look great, all this stuff. And he's like, at the time, I think I was, shit, man, I was probably 32. Like, we're really looking for guys like 25, 27. He's like, but, you know, we'll strongly consider you. You know, just keep working and all that stuff. Well, once I got over to Texas and started working there with Hernandez, I'm like, well, maybe there's a shot I could get in TNA, you know, because it seems like the WWE just wants fucking younger guys, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm, you know, Sean was always like, look, you got to be TV, like, you can't, this isn't, we don't have developmental TNA. You got to be TV ready, like, get in shape, shape. So I ended up dropping, like, I got to Texas, I think I was probably about 250. I got down to, like, 225. I was pretty diced up.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm like, all right. He's like, well, we're going to get you squared. We're going to get you squared away. I, all these fucking promises. I never told the Sean Hernandez story because, you know, he's a straight shooter. You know what I mean? He's like, let me talk to some people. Let me see what I can do. So
yeah, hit us with the story.
Yeah, I'm like, fuck, my life was falling apart down there. I'm like, fuck this, I'm going back to Pittsburgh. Well, you know, I got back up here, and a buddy of mine was working, doing some stuff with TNA as well, and I sent stuff off to Terry Taylor, and, you know, I said, if you ever need, you know, if you guys come to Pittsburgh, you ever need any help with security or anything like that, you know, please let me know. He goes, I'll take a look at your stuff, you know, it's cool, and, so Sean came into town and worked for IWC. I think he wrestled Ray Rowe when he was here. And, you know, so I took him out on the town afterwards and shit. And, you know, next thing you know, the guy that I know in TNA, he gets fired from there. And I'm pretty sure I got blacklisted because of it, because he kept pushing for me, you know.
Jesus.
So, again, you know what I mean? Like, I've had this fucking... There's a reason. There's a reason I was never supposed to make it, like, in the big time. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it'd be the, you know, I like to party, man. I used to like to drink, but I have a feeling I would have, like, I may have fallen victim of, like, being an alcoholic or, you know, something worse. Who knows? But, yeah, that's it, man. But, hey, look at me now. I am the IWC Heavyweight Champion.
It all worked out. I mean, that's a hell of a story. Like, hey, you think you're going to get your big break? You start talking with Pritchard. You talk to, geez, Kevin Kelly. You're working in Texas, thinking you're going to get your big break, and then next thing you know, it just seems like not you, but everyone else gets fired. That was kind of like poaching for you. Like, hey, we need to bring this guy in. Okay, well, you're fired. It's
It was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, I mean, I already made the comment previously, but when it rains, it pours. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, I don't think anyone's ever gotten the full in-depth story of how close, even Plummer had no idea, that I did anything with the WWE shit like that back in the day. You know, I was on Velocity and I did a, Sunday Night Heat or whatever it was, you know, Civic Arena. We were at a meeting the one time, and I can't remember what we're talking about. Virgil came up and he made a comment. Well, at least at least he stepped foot in the WWE ring. And that fucking, I was like, learn your fucking history, man. You know, don't come at me with that bullshit because I've been there. You know,
who did you face on Velocity in Sunday Night Heat?
Velocity was me and Bobby Roode versus A-Train and Rhino on the Sunday Night Heat. I don't know if it was I got a picture of it. I don't know if I never watched it, saw it on TV. I saw the Velocity. I didn't see the Sunday Night Heat one. It might have been just the dark for all I know, but I got a picture and it says Sunday Night Heat in the background. It was me and Nick Dinsmore before he was Eugene, versus Travis Bane and Seven, who went on to be was Travis Tomko, and it was what the fuck was that? Remember the guy? He You know who Seven is? The dude, he came out with white hair and white thing, went after Kevin Thorne.
Yeah, that's
he did the whatever thing with the Undertaker, and then they repackaged him on the WWE.
Mordecai
is Kevin Thorne. Yeah.
Mordecai.
Yeah. He hit me with a fucking clothesline, man, and then squeezed my face so hard that he popped my jaw out of place.
I thought, fuck, what?
Yeah, I blasted him with a fucking drop kick, and I don't throw drop kicks, but I've got my fat ass up in the air and fucking blasted him. But.
That's a guy that they had a lot invested in. They threw him so many characters, and for so long they thought he was like the. I don't know how much weight the story really holds, but there's so many people that said that he was going to be groomed to be like the next Undertaker.
They had a lot of faith in him. They held him when we were in that tryout camp. They would use him as an example that. He came in there during a tryout with a flu. He was throwing, they had a garbage can set up. He kept throwing up and kept wrestling. And they said, he goes, what do I do? And Dr. Tom's like, well, if you're on the road, I mean, what are you going to do then? And he goes, enough said. He got back in the ring and kept wrestling. You know, so I think he had a lot of heart, whereas a lot of people would probably fucking quit.
Or try to reschedule, and they just look at him and say, fuck you. Like, better luck next time, champ.
Right. I don't know. They probably saw more something than him, you know? Nice guy, though. I met a lot of guys at that tryout camp. If you remember Luther Reigns, Horseshoe from WCW.
Oh, yeah.
I wrestled Batista down there during that thing, right before he went on TV.
Oh, shit.
I went out. Bobby Roode threw up all over my fucking car.
Whoa!
We went to a club, and
yeah, we need this story like right now.
Yeah, so it was fucking. Let's see here. It was me, Jin Drag, Sean O'Hare.
Oh man, what a talent!
What the fuck is the? Remember when they did that whole group? There was the
Natural Born Killers.
Mike Sanders, is that his name?
Yeah, Natural Born Killers. I actually, I kid you not even joking, I showed this promo to someone earlier today. It's the promo, I forget what pay-per-view it is. It's one of my favorite Mean Gene Okerlund promos. And it's the Natural Born Killers. And Mean Gene, like, I forget what his name was. I'm blanking on it as well. He calls him a prick. And then, like, Sean O'Hare, like, jumps in. He's like, why don't you shut up? And then Mean Gene's just like, dude, I got guys that can take out your kneecaps, O'Hare. Shut up. And I literally played it earlier today. That's so crazy.
How ironic is that?
Oh, absolutely. Literally. Just watched it not even 3 hours ago. That's hilarious. Fantastic. But, yeah, they were the Natural Born Killers in
Yeah.
Or was it? No, it was Natural Born Thrillers, I believe. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah,
I would have to look at it.
I think it was the Thrillers.
Yeah, I don't think they could use Killers.
Yeah, that was... But, yeah, there was a handful of those guys. We all went out, and then next thing, we ran into a group of... they were, like, semi-pro hockey players. Over in Cincinnati, I guess they have a team that's like, not NHL, but like their farm system. So they're like, hey, we're going to this after hours club. Why don't you guys come with us? So it was, I ended up going with like O'Hare, Jin Drag, and I had my car. And I'm like, here, you guys take my fucking car. I can't remember who, there was some kid from Canada. I can't remember his name, but he was driving and Bobby Roode was throwing up out the back window all over the side of my car. They got pulled over in my car. They had no idea. All they knew me was Jimmy Vegas. They didn't know my shoot name. I had an FOP badge on my plate that I got from a guy that worked for me when I was managing a security company. And he was a retired policeman. He's like, if anyone gives me any problems, you know, they're like, so this cop's like, so let me get this straight, guys. You're driving around in a cop's car, and you don't know his name? Like they were almost ready to go to jail. They thought the car was stolen, you know. And they explained that, hey, we're here on the WWE tryout camp and this and that, and that held enough clout to get them out of it, you know. So we ended up getting home. It was me. What the fuck was it? O'Hare's car. It was this Lexus. We're in this fucking Lexus, and we pull up, and there's my car with vomit all over it. I'm like, what the fuck? So I go in, and I'm like, who threw up all over the car? And they're like, Rube did. So I go to wake him up, and he's like, fuck you, I'm not doing nothing now. He was annihilated. So in the morning, he came, and he goes, give me your keys, I'll be back. He went and had it. He said he washed it three times to get the shit, the puke off of it. And it was a wild one, man. It was all there.
Is that your craziest party story you got? Because I think from your party days, I think you can do maybe a little bit better than that. Is that your craziest party story you got?
No. There's some I can't even talk about. There's
Touché.
The Sandman.
Oh Jesus!
Every time Sandman would come into town, I was like his keeper. You know, we'd end up working matches and shit like that, and then I'd take him back to the hotel or whatnot. So, we went out to Tequila Willie's, which is down. It was used to be in the Strip District of Pittsburgh, and I think I've told this story before, so this one's on the record, but the after part will be
an exclusive. Anytime
anybody you talk about is Sandman around the IWC locker room, they'll go, yo, Magnus, show him your ass. Okay, so we'll get to that point in a minute. So we're down there. It was me, Cabana, Punk, Christopher Daniels, and Hack. And we're in this place. And he ordered all these Long Island iced teas. And I guess he realized what time it was. And he's like, okay. So he ended up giving the bartender like $20 to strain these drinks. And he drank them all like shots. I think there had to be 15, 20 of these fucking things up there. I mean, there was a shit ton of drinks. He pounds them down and we leave. So we're going, we get out in Moontown by the airport and we stay at this hotel. Well, everybody goes their separate ways except me and Hat. And we go, there was this two girls that used to always come and bring him his party favors. And so we're all in it. And this is the first time, like I never saw half the shit that I saw with this dude. You know what I mean? I'm like, what the fuck? That's real. That's real shit there. But, so he's trying, what the fuck? He's going to fucking kill me. He's trying to get this chick to blow him. Right. And he's yelling, bag it. You count the 300. He goes, hey, honey, I'm not going to be able to get a hard on. I guarantee it. Vegas, start counting. 1 to 1,000, 2 to 1,000. I'm like, are you serious? And he goes, he got his pants down and shit. And like, the girl's like, no, stop it. Just stop it. Just stop it. So next thing he goes, hey, Vegas, let's get this party started. Show him your ass. This kid's got a great ass. And I'm like, what the fuck is? Don't make me pull rank. Don't make me pull rank. Needless to say, I had to show these broads my ass. You know, so we'll leave the rest of the night up to the imagination. But Hack used to bring the crazy out of me. So he had me super glue Balls Mahoney's forehead together in a BP parking lot one night. I was like, am I a fucking doctor? He's like, Vegas, you can do it. Just squeeze it together and squirt the shit in his fucking cut. So.
Holy
yeah.
You win. I don't have anything even close to that.
There's one more hack story. So, again, we had I don't know if you're familiar with the Pittsburgh International Airport, how far it is to Uniontown. It's a fucking height, all right? So the car that Bobby Roode threw up in, before that, it was brand fucking new, all right? My biggest fear was hack smoking in my car. And you can't, you can't be like, hey, hack, like, you can't smoke in my fucking car, you know? So, I mean, he'll pull rank. I pick him up, we drive all the way to Uniontown. We're in the car for an hour and some change. No cigarettes, He's got some drinks. He's in the back seat having the drinks. He's having his laughs and all that stuff. We go to Uniontown. We do the show. We're driving home. We get probably 10 miles from the hotel. He gets a phone call. Apparently, the person, I don't know if it's New Japan Wrestling or one of the Japanese things, they owed him money and weren't going to pay him. He loses his fucking mind. These motherfuckers aren't going to pay me. All I hear is click, click, click. I look in the mirror, and then boom, he's lighting up a cigarette. I'm like, holy fuck. I almost made it there and back without him smoking, and some motherfucker had to go and call and tell him that he wasn't getting paid from Japan. He was fucking livid. So
jeez.
That was another one.
As a former smoker, I completely understand.
Yeah, he was so mad. I couldn't even. I'm like, man. He was always good to me, though. Like, you know, when we went out, he would always buy drinks and buy food. He found some after hours club out in by the airport. I had no idea this place existed. We walked in. It looked like a storefront with like mirrored windows, and opened the door, and this big fucking looked like a Samoan standing at the door. Hey, Hack. He's like, hey. All these guys are with me. It was me, AJ Styles, I think Cabana again, might have been Punk again as well. We went in, and he ordered us all this fucking food, and we always had a good time with him. It was always, if it wasn't a fucking party, we were eating like kings, you know.
No, oh, so, jeez.
It was cool. I mean, you don't see that same mentality anymore. Like, you know, all the kids, I call them kids, all the younger guys, a lot of them go to like Carriage Inn after the shows and stuff, and you know, but you can just tell it's not the same as when, you know, the old ECW guys used to come to town. It was a fucking party, you know, a party,
yeah.
Not just going to have some drinks, you know.
Well, and when you have literally lived in your city for as long as you possibly have, and here's a guy that's introducing you to places you didn't even know existed. It's like, okay,
yeah,
you've been around the blocks. Yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
Like, I had that with a buddy of mine. We went out, this was probably like 2-3 years ago, and he's like, look, I'm going to take you to this after party spot. Now, I've lived in Cleveland for 30-plus years, and okay. He took me to this after party spot that I literally thought was an abandoned building for as long. And I used to drive past it at a former employment. I used to drive past this building every single day. And I just thought, this is an abandoned building. No,
yeah.
It is the nice. And I'm not going to say where it is or what it is. It's a very exclusive club. And I walk in, it is the nicest place I have ever been in my life. I walked in, yeah. Jaw on the ground. I'm like, how do you know of this place and how do I become a member? And he's like, yeah, you can't be a member. And I can't explain why you can't be a member. Just be on your best behavior and yeah. You're going to get taken care of. And I don't even think my wife knows exactly where it is. I don't even think my wife's heard this story, but it was the nicest
shit out of a movie.
Oh my! No, I would never. I can't take my wife there. Let's just put it that way, and we'll leave it at that. It was the nicest.
Yep, understood.
Oh God, it was the nicest place I've ever been in my life. But best party night I have ever had in my entire. I partied until 4:45 in the morning. We left the bar, and there's one in my hometown. There's one bar that is grandfathered into the old salt mine.
Okay.
So the salt mine the salt mine workers, they would work generally nights. So when they would get off work at 5 o'clock in the morning, the bars weren't open. There was one bar in my hometown that was open at 5:30, and it was a salt mine kind of bar. So it's 4:45. We're walking out of this nice nightclub. He's like, dude, I'm not done partying yet. Like, let's keep this going. I'm like, look, if you're willing to hold out for maybe 40 minutes. I know of a place that's opening very soon. He's like, oh, man, like, is it as nice as place, like this place? I'm like, absolutely fucking not. I'm like, take this and step it down about 15 flights, and that's the bar I'm going to take you to. And we walk in, and my dad, he wakes up every morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, like clockwork. He's up, he's drinking his coffee, and he'll go to the bar and open it. And I walk in, and they look at me, and like I don't have a shoot name, so they're like, oh, you're Carney's kid. I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, your dad will probably be here in like 5-10 minutes. I'm like, yeah, can you call him and send him on a run of some kind, make some shit up? Because I don't want to see him right now, and more importantly, I don't want him to see me like this. We open the bar. We were probably there until about 8:45. My dad comes walking in, and I'm stumbling out. And he's like, I will be calling you later on today. And I just looked at my dad without even skipping a beat. I'm like, make sure it's after 6 because I'm going to bed. And 6:01, my dad's calling me. He's like, you care to explain to me what's going on? I'm like, I don't remember. That was by far the craziest party night I've ever had, and I barely remember any of it. But like, yeah.
The ones that you forget are probably the best.
Oh no, I remember the important parts, but
there are some
cloudy points where it's like, okay, I don't remember how we got to this part of the conversation, but I remember what escalated from that comment. If that makes sense. I used to work in nightclubs. I used to be a nightclub DJ for the longest time, and geez, I could bore you with stories. We'll talk about it. I'm going to pull, and no disrespect to you, but I'm going to pull Jack Pollock. Jack Pollock gave a shit because we said we were going to talk about something off of the air, and he's like, no, you don't hide shit from people. You just tell them what it is. So now it's on the show now. Don't pull a Pollock. If you're going to say we're going to talk about it on the air, no, fuck that. You're going to do it with a live mic, and you're going to let everyone know. But with the stories I could tell you, I have to tell you off of the air just because some people might get brought up on charges, and they may they may or may not be main figures in my town, and I will tell you off of the air. Obviously, as we mentioned before we started recording here, I almost said filming. No one wants to film with me right now. I'm in a dark basement. I didn't even turn on any lights. This is weird. But we're recording right now. Before we started recording, you said, hey, it's already I normally go to bed around this time, so I appreciate you staying up this late and talking with us, and I truly appreciate your time. We're not going to take too much more of your time. What I want to do at this point, because I feel like we have so much more to talk about. What I'm going to do right now, this is the first time we've ever done this, I want to invite you back for a part two. I think our fans deserve a part two. I think the story's just begun. So what do you say, Jimmy Vegas, part two coming soon? Are you in?
Out? I'm in. Perfect. I understand that there's a story that we need to touch base on that Falk Nasty had brought up that about the Tiger King. We'll bring that up in part two.
Well, that's a teaser if I've ever heard one, but if you do want to follow along, you can find them all across social media. You can find them in all of our posts, all across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. If you want to see where you can find him next when wrestling resumes, obviously you're going to find him the most defending the IWC Heavyweight Championship at IWC when shows resume, hopefully very, very soon. But Jimmy Vegas, thank you so much for coming on. I am pumped for part two, and I appreciate you giving the spoiler that I was about to give, because we're definitely getting into that Tiger King story, but we're just not going to do it in this round.
It's a doozy. I'm going to hype it up. It's a fucking doozy. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm pumped, but more importantly, I'm pumped for part two. So, Jimmy, thank you so much. We truly appreciate
your time. I appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So there's been a few rumblings around. I don't know if you've seen some of them or not, but there are some promotions that have announced some shows coming up in July. So one of which was a big announcement for GCW. So we're starting to get back. Hopefully, I'm knocking on wood right now. We're getting back to normal. So or as close to normal as we're going to get, obviously. So who knows how long it's going to be before we can have packed houses and we can find ourselves enjoying IWC with all of our listeners once again and all other promotions. I'm still waiting for GCW, the show that we were supposed to go to that was going to be here in Cleveland. That had to get canceled because of COVID. I think that was back in March, and they had to cancel it, and they postponed it, that is. But it hasn't been announced when that's going to retake place. So hopefully very soon we're going to be back to independent wrestling in no time. Once again, if there is any guests that you do want to hear on the show, we're going to keep things light today. Obviously, you know what's happening in the wrestling world because there's not a lot going on. What can we say that hasn't already been said? What can we discuss that hasn't already been discussed? And at this point, if there's a guest that you want to hear on the show, all you have to do is just reach out. We'd be more than happy. But as it was discussed, we are going to have Jimmy Vegas back for part two. So be on the lookout for that very, very soon. But everybody, have a great night. If you haven't already followed us all across social media, you know exactly where to find us. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow our alternative podcast, which hopefully we'll be dropping another episode very, very soon. And that, of course, is The Muni Pod. Find us all across social media as well. And be sure to tell your friends, send the link and follow along so you don't miss our next drop of episodes. I'm sure you're more excited for that, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm ready for football.
I'm ready for football, too. So as long as – and I'm waiting for baseball, too. So,
oh, dude, there's back and forth on
– Oh, back this, and forth. That. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and everyone just keeps rejecting everybody's proposal. So
who knows if we're even going to have baseball in 2020 at this point.
The owners are going to put about a 50-game schedule together, and it's going to be garbage.
Yeah. And then what kind of a trophy is that going to be? Let's say the Indians win. Are we going to celebrate it like we won a full season? No, probably not. So at this point, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have a great weekend. Be kind to each other, and we will see you next week.